you so much for being here, members and visitors alike. As was promised this morning, I am going to share a few thoughts that are have their origin in a little adventure that I took with the Godwin boys and Steve Browning a week ago Saturday. And seemed to go pretty good. Everybody had a good time. Only one of us brought any meat home for our families, but I'm not going to share who that was because that would not be polite. But a good time was had by all. I have not gone gone deer hunting in probably 35 years, close to 40 years. And I mentioned a few weeks ago that in my deer hunting history, I am a total of one for one. I fired one shot in my life at a deer and I hit him. And I thought at the time that I was going to retire. But I was invited to go out. I was glad to go. And I am still one for one. Did not take a shot, nor did anyone else. I did shoot a wild hog, so I did a little favor for mankind doing that. And it cooks up pretty good, as it turns out. But you don't want to hear about that. Some of you have gone deer hunting, some of you haven't. Those of you who haven't, you probably have a pretty good idea what deer hunting is, and that's probably why you haven't gone deer hunting. It's just not the most exciting thing in the world. For 10 seconds, it couldn't be more exciting, and the rest of it just could not be less exciting. It's basically sitting in the cold on an uncomfortable chair waiting for something to happen, and most of the time it doesn't. And that has its advantages. That allows you a lot of time. And for better or for worse, I have taken to using times like that to, when it's convenient, scribble things down. And when it's not convenient like it was then, I wouldn't have been able to hold a pencil anyway, as cold as it was. But when it's not convenient, I'd try to store it up in my memory. Maybe I'll write it down a little bit later. And that's what I did. And that's what we're going to talk about here for a little bit. Some lessons that I learned or was reminded of, as it were, when I had a little bit of extra time to think in an environment where there was very little to do except think. And so it's offered for your consideration. I hope it'll be useful to you in your life. Point number one, there's no particular order here, but point number one is you don't see everything. And what I mean by that is it had been a while since, as I mentioned before, between my ventures. But very quickly I remembered. The last thing in the world that you want to happen when you go deer hunting is there to be a deer that you don't see. That would be the worst possible scenario. You just absolutely don't want that. So as soon as you get in there and you get up there and you're getting all fired up in there, and you're after about 10, 15, 30 seconds or so, 5 minutes for sure, you start feeling like you are one with the universe. Like you see everything. You are hyper aware. If a bird flutters, you see it. And if a leaf rustles, you see it. And if there's a crackling branch, you hear it. You're completely aware of everything that's going on in the forest, which is silly, of course. You are not aware of everything. You're aware of the things you're aware of. And that's it. No more, no less. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that it's easy to convince ourselves that I am paying so much attention here, I'm working so hard at this, that nothing is escaping my notice. And with a little bit of introspection, with a little bit of honesty, you realize that's just not the case. In fact, there are all kinds of things that are going on because of obstructed views, because of your limited eyesight, because of all kinds of things. You are not, in fact, aware of everything. And this is not just a lesson on deer hunting here. Of course, it were primarily one. Like I'm qualified to give a lesson on deer hunting. But the point is a spiritual point that I'm trying to get at here. When I am dealing with human beings, my tendency is to judge on shallow things, the things that I see, and assume that's all there is. And I understand everything perfectly, and I have all the information, or at least all the relevant information, and so therefore I am equipped to pass an appropriate judgment on the circumstance for good or for ill. And that's just not true. There is, in fact, a great deal of information that is not only hidden from me, but inaccessible to me, that I cannot possibly know. And so maybe I ought to be a little bit cautious in assuming that I have some kind of anything remotely resembling full knowledge about the things that are going on in my life. Jesus tells us to judge righteous judgment, for instance, in John chapter 7, verse 24. The idea of passing judgment is not only a necessary thing, it's an inevitable thing. It is part of our job as Christians, it's part of our life as human beings, to assess good versus bad, holy versus evil, things like that. We're going to be passing that sort of judgment all the time. Don't let anybody kid you. They pass judgment too. We all do it. That's not a good thing or a bad thing. That's just a human thing. The important thing is that when we are assessing things, and especially when we are judging our fellow human beings, our fellow Christians, that we use righteous judgment, that we understand what we know, we understand what we don't know, and we understand that there are situations where it's not necessary for us to pass judgment at all. I've commented on this on Facebook a few times in recent couple of years or so, that something comes up. You know, there's some kind of foreign conflict, or there's some kind of crisis, or somebody's on trial for something, and everybody wants to know who's guilty and who's not guilty, who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, and we know who the good guys are. And I'm telling everybody, this is the good guys. And if you don't believe that, then you're obviously just horrible human beings. Because I have all the relevant information. I know exactly what's going on. Because, you know, I've read a couple of websites. You know, I spent at least 6 to 7 minutes doing research on this thing. And so we know how it works. I am dialed into the universe here. Well, no, I'm not. And it may be not only that I don't have enough information or I have faulty information, it might be that it's not really all that important for me to pass judgment at all. Maybe it's okay for me to just try to be a Christian. Maybe it's okay for me to simply be a good example as much as I can and have a good influence as much as I can on somebody else and let it go with that. Maybe it's not necessary for me to pose myself as being hyper aware of all of these kind of things. It's not necessary to pass judgment in every situation necessarily. You can't get by on, you know, well, I'm never going to pass judgment on anybody. You have to do it sometimes. But we realize that it's not always going to be necessary. There's an interesting passage in Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 17, one that's always kind of grabbed my attention as a dog owner and someone has a limited amount of experience in such things. Like one who takes a dog by the ears is he who passes by and meddles with a strife not belonging to him. Have you ever known of somebody who like that? Who they just can't help but get involved? And not only get involved, but start bossing people around and say, okay, here's the way I handle all this. And they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're doing. And half the time they're going to make, you know, fools of themselves. And they may very well make the problem worse instead of better. It's just not productive. There is such a thing as none of my business. And it's not going to be an embarrassment for us to admit that. Again, we're not hyper aware. We are not fully dialed into all the information. It's okay to admit that. Now, that being said, we have an obligation, if we're going to do our job as deer hunters or as Christians, to be as alert as we can be, so that we have as much information as we can have in these situations. It's not just enough to say, well, I can't know the relevant information, so I'm just going to kind of let it go. No, that's not good enough. I do need to be alert as much as I can. There's a lot of things that are said in the Bible about rest and about sleep. And I found this interesting. Almost every time that you find reference to rest in the Bible, it's a good thing. And almost every time you find reference to sleep in the Bible, it's a bad thing. I found that kind of ironic there. The rest that God offers us is a good thing, something we're looking forward to, something we're hoping for one of these days. Sleep tends to be used metaphorically for inactivity or inattention, for laziness, things of that nature. Romans chapter 13 is one example here, and there are several others, but this will do for our purposes. Romans 13 and verse number 11 and 12. Do this, and he's talking about love being the fulfillment of the law and the obligation that we have to love our neighbor and various other specific admonitions that he's seen in the last chapter and a half or so. Do this, he says, knowing the time, that it is already the hour for you to awaken from sleep. For now salvation is nearer to us than when we believe. The night is almost gone, the day is near. Therefore let us lay aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. What Paul is saying here in so many words is that there are people out there who are sleepwalking. They are completely unaware of the important elements of life, the existence of God, their purpose in life, eternal judgment, things of that nature. They are completely ignorant and thrilled to death about it. And they're wandering around in the darkness. You don't have to be that way. In fact, you shouldn't be that way, he says. Be alert, be awake. Because the longer you live in this life, the closer you're getting to judgment, the closer you're getting to giving account of the choices that you're making in this life. Realize that not everything out there is worthy of our attention, and I say that because some people's idea of being aware of as much as possible is getting all the dirt on their fellow Christians and trying to help out by sticking their nose in people's business and things like that. There are situations in which you can help and that you should help in the lives of your brothers and sisters in Christ. Hidden cameras are probably a step too far in most situations. Not everything is going to be worthy of our attention. Also, realize that not everything worthy of our attention is going to be easily seen. So you can go to all kinds of extremes here. Well, what I need to do is do absolutely everything to get absolutely every bit of information there is. You know, well, that may be a bit too much. Well, or I could assume that since something doesn't appear to be obvious, something it just doesn't jump out and grab me as being important, well, it must not be important. Well, that's a mistake too. Somebody say, how this is starting to sound really, really complicated. Well, you know what it is. And the younger ones maybe don't appreciate this. In fact, I'm quite sure they don't appreciate this. That dealing with such matters in life, interacting with humans on a regular basis, interacting with Christians, living a life as a Christian, is complicated. Your obligations, your needs, your requirements are going to be complicated. And all we can do at the end of the day is do the best we can. Recognize what our requirements are, what is expected of us, and carry those out to the best of our ability. Trust in God that He'll be merciful and just in His dealings with us, and that ultimately we'll be judged as people who believed in God and committed ourselves to His task and did the best that we can under the circumstances. Well, that's one point. Let me give you a second point. Wishing is worthless. I have become really frustrated at people who wish for things. It's become one of my least favorite words these days. You get up in the deer blind, and this is I bet you every person who's ever gone deer hunting has gone through this, and I know I have. I went through it last Saturday. You get up in the deer blind, and you get up there, and you're sitting for like, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes, whatever, and nothing's going on. Absolutely nothing's going on. And you think, you know what I wish right now? I wish that this big 12-point buck had just come right out of the clearing, out there into the clearing just now. I don't need him to be on my doorstep. You know, I'm willing to work a little bit for this, but somewhere within range, he kind of present himself a little bit there, so I can take a good. I really wish. Nothing. Well, maybe I wasn't wishing hard enough. You know, what's the point of any of that, right? That's just not realistic. You can wish for anything you want to, and you can rub a little magic lamp or a bunny's foot or whatever you want to do while you're doing it. The bottom line is, it's probably not the best expenditure of your time. You're not expected to deal with the circumstances of your choosing because you don't get to choose your circumstances. What you need to do is make your circumstances as much as you can. There's a limited degree to which you can do that, but you can do some. Preparation is key. For instance, you know, if I have a 5-second window to take a shot, it'd be nice if my weapon was already loaded, if it was within easy reach. You know, that a little bit of preparation goes a long way. Not everybody thinks that way. We read a few moments ago from Matthew chapter 25 about the 10 virgins, and some were prepared and some were not quite as prepared as they thought they were under the circumstances. And because they were not extra prepared, if you will, they wound up lacking, and they missed out on the opportunity that they were looking forward to. The door was shut against them. Now, whether you get into a wedding or not may not sound like the biggest deal in the world. For these people, obviously it was. And that phrase there, the door was shut, that's always seemed to be one of the most powerful and ominous phrases in all of the Bible. The door was shut, and clearly shut for good. Nobody's getting in at this point. I don't even know who you are. You're not getting in. You missed your opportunity. If you had been prepared, and other people were prepared, you had the same opportunities that they did. But you weren't prepared, and therefore, you're going to miss out. We cannot be expected to perform as we ought to without being properly prepared. And in a spiritual sense, this is talking about Bible study. This is talking about knowledge. It's talking about preparation, practice. There are all kinds of things that you can do so that in the day of trial, when you are called upon to perform as a Christian, you'll be reasonably expected to be able to perform. Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse number 3, chapter 2, verse 3, rather. Yeah, I'll get it right in a second. Chapter 1, verse 13, that's what I meant to say. Therefore, Peter writes, again, 1 Peter 1, verse 13, sorry about that. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And he goes on to talk about some more specifics that you can do to prepare. And we have other specifics in other places. Let's accept in principle this notion here, first of all, though, that you have to prepare your mind for action if you're going to act properly. And this goes if you are a 100-meter sprinter. This goes if you're a deer hunter. If you are a trial lawyer, a surgeon, whatever. Any kind of situation in which you're going to be called upon for important action at relatively short notice, especially this is the case. When the time comes, are you going to be prepared to act? And act well and act responsibly. If you're not prepared, then you probably are not going to be able to do that. Focus is key. And not just focus through the scope thing that Steve Browning was willing to loan to me. I appreciate that. Well, it was attached to a gun. He loaned me the gun, too. So I gave him some meat, okay? Anyway, being focused, and I'm rambling all over the place. Clearly, I'm not focused. Sorry about that. Anyway, Hebrews chapter 12, verse number 1 and 2. Pardon me. Therefore, and after the, of course, he's talked about the so-called roll call of faith in chapter 11, right? All these great examples of faith and faithful behavior and action that showed the faith of these individuals and how they're great examples for us. Therefore, he says, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. We focus on Jesus. This is our objective. This is our target, if you will. If you're in archery and you're drawing the bow back and you're trying to figure out where you're supposed to focus, where you're supposed to look, maybe you should look at the target. That'd be a really good place for you to look. In fact, it's kind of pointless to look anywhere else. If you don't look anywhere else, you're not being responsible. You're probably being dangerous, quite frankly. When we are trying to become Christians, we're trying to be the kind of Christians that Jesus wants us to be, the only reasonable thing for us to do is to focus on Jesus. And the more we know about him, the more we're going to be able to mimic his behavior in our own lives. There's no way that we're going to be able to properly support the gospel in our life if we have our spiritual baggage hanging around us. The apostle here, the writer in Hebrews, compares it to the runner who lays aside every encumbrance. You know, the details are rather graphic, actually, in Greek times. We'll spare you the photographic essay of that. But nevertheless, they certainly did everything they could to make sure that the things that might tie them down, things that might limit their behavior, their action, get them far away. And that doesn't mean just take them off or get them away. Don't throw them out there in front of your path. Get them far away, where not only are they not in the way, they're not going to be in the way in the future. That's the focus that we need to be showing in our lives. The ones who are incapable of doing that, Jesus equates them to a seed that's planted in thorny ground or weedy soil. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 22, and Mark and Luke have parallel passages, where this soil is not capable of supporting the seed properly, not because there's something wrong with the soil, but because it's so busy distributing its efforts to all these other things. It's too cluttered. Too many things going on. Too many interests. Too many competing interests. Jesus wants to simplify. Focus. That's not to say you have to throw your TV away necessarily, or quit going to the movies or quit reading books or whatever your personal distraction is. But if you realize that this focus, this secondary focus is interfering with my walk with Christ, then it might be something to look at. Surely, focusing on Jesus is the only important thing for us to do in this life. And anything that we are doing that keeps us from doing that is something that we need to reevaluate. Also, contentment. I want to focus on contentment here a little bit. I said before that I had a good time deer hunting. The key to enjoying deer hunting is deciding ahead of time that you're going to enjoy deer hunting. Because if you don't decide ahead of time, you're going to find a lot of opportunities to be miserable under most circumstances. It's most of the time when you go, it's cold, it's rather dull, it's loud, it's frustrating. It seems like it's a complete and total waste of time. And after 3 hours, 4 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is that you spend out there, if you're spending the whole entire time thinking, well, if I bring home a deer, then I don't care. If I get a nice deer that I'm proud of, I don't care about any of this. That'll be a successful hunt. Then you set yourself up for failure, right? This is what happens if you don't get one. Well, that was a total waste. What was I doing out there? Well, it was a complete and total waste of time. The key is finding contentment in the activity rather than in the results. See, I was told that I'm going to go out there with some good fellas. We're going to probably have a pretty good conversation on the way. And it's a pretty long conversation, as it turns out, because we're going way out there. I think we went to Tennessee or something. And then on the way back, too, it's going to be camaraderie. It's going to be a good experience. I'm going to enjoy this. I'm determined to enjoy this. Turns out it did. Finding the contentment in the activity itself rather than the results. I try to get the girls to appreciate this when we start getting more into playing games as a family. It's not about winning the game. It's about playing the game. It's about being involved. It's about enjoying the activity rather than some kind of gratification for winning the activity. Contentment can be a very difficult thing to come by as a Christian. And it's a very needful commodity. Jesus says through the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 4 and verse number 12 and 13, you know the text fairly well, I suspect. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Appreciate this. Focus on this. If you have Jesus in your life, and Jesus is what you want out of your life, it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter what other people are doing. It doesn't matter what the temperature is, or whether you're married or single, whether you have children, you have not enough children, too many children, whatever your situation may be. It doesn't matter. Because Jesus is your contentment, and you have Jesus. I get very frustrated and fearful for Christians who seem to be determined to change their life in such a way as to make them more happy or more contented, or they may think themselves to be better Christians. I could be so much better in whatever way I might define better if I were in this other situation. I urge you to fight that notion. I'm not saying you can't change your circumstances. I'm certainly not saying you can't improve your circumstances. I'm saying find your contentment where you are. Paul found his contentment in prison. Says, yeah, I get to preach to all these Roman soldiers. I never met any of these guys before. And now I'm meeting all of them. I get to preach to all of them. How great this is. Would he have chosen to get out? Sure, I'm sure he would have chosen to get out. But he didn't have that choice. And so, therefore, it was his decision while he wrote the book of Philippians, this tremendously uplifting book, it was his choice to find his contentment in the here and now, where he was, not where he wanted to be. And that's what we need to be doing. We need to find satisfaction in the effort that we're putting forth, not in the result. This has tremendous application with regard to teaching your neighbors about the gospel. If I could just convert, 5 people a year, 10 people a year, 1 person a year, whatever it happens to be, if I could die with one soul that I could point to and say, I made a difference there, then that would make me so happy. Well, I'm sure it would, and that would be very gratifying. How about this instead? I talked about the gospel that everybody had a chance to. I did the best I could to influence as many people as I could toward the gospel.
That's where our contentment is going to be, not in some kind of tally sheet that we may be putting together and tempted, by the way, to compare to other people's tally sheets. The point is for us to measure ourselves according to our effort, not according to our results. Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the course, I have kept the faith. In the future there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge will award me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Anyway, excuse me. I have fought the good fight, I've finished the course, I've kept the faith, I've baptized a lot of people. That's not what he says. I'm not sure I ever thought about that until I read this passage. I fought the good fight, I finished the course, I kept the faith, I saved a whole lot of people from going to hell. How many people did Paul save? I don't know. Paul didn't know. How could he possibly know? All that he knew was that he fought the fight. That he finished the course. He kept the faith. That's where his contentment was. And that's where our contentment needs to be also. Point number three, and this we'll close with this. Find joy and purpose in the moment. Find a way to make every moment that God gave you count. Some moments, that's going to be more of a challenge than others. But when there's absolutely nothing going on, suddenly you got nothing to do but think. Well, what am I going to think about? Well, maybe I'll think about something important. And suddenly you're focusing your mind in directions that are profitable. Even if nothing concrete or substantial or life-altering is going on, there is a chance for you to appreciate the moment as it is. Now, I was blessed to have a beautiful day to go deer hunting one like this. I'm sure I would have been able to find joy and purpose in the moment if it had been like this, but it was a lot easier with the day that God gave me on that day. It was great. It was cold. Yeah, it was real cold. But the sky was blue. The breeze wasn't too bad. Beautiful scenery. It was marvelous. And it was a relatively easy thing for me to do, to say, well, if I don't have anything going on right now, what I ought to do is praise God. Now, when you're in deer blind, you probably ought not sing out loud. That's probably not going to be a good strategy for you as far as deer hunting goes. But in a general sort of sense, if you are aware of what God is doing for you in the moment, if you're aware of the marvelous world that he's given you and the opportunity that you have to live in it and serve him in it, what better opportunity is there to praise God? What would there be in the world that would be better for us to do than praise God? I cited Psalm 98. Any number of other passages would do. But we'll focus on this one for the moment. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done wonderful things. His right hand and his holy arm have gained the victory for him. The Lord has made known his salvation. He has revealed his righteousness in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his loving kindness and his faithfulness to the house of Israel. All of the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Shout joyfully to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth and sing for joy and sing praises. Sing praises to the Lord with the lyre and the sound of melody, with trumpets and the sound of the horn. Shout joyfully before the Lord, before the King, the Lord. Let the sea roar and all it contains, the world and all those who dwell in it. Let the rivers clap their hands. Let the mountains sing together for joy before the Lord, for he is coming to judge the earth. He will judge the earth with righteousness and the peoples with equity. And there are probably 100 passages that we could go to that would do exactly the same thing, as well or better. But we'll stop with this one. Find time to acknowledge God verbally, or at least mentally, to realize what a wonderful God it is that we're serving, and how marvelous the opportunities are for us to serve him in this life. And sometimes I think you'll find, I have found in my life, the quieter the moment is, the louder God speaks to us. This is especially true in nature, I think. Not to say that you can't see the hand of God in the city and the hustle and bustle and such, because you can. But there's no better time to see God and to hear God than when there's absolutely nothing going on. There's a story given to us in 1 Kings chapter 19 where, I think we referenced a part of this story earlier this morning, where Elijah's in desperate need of encouragement, and he wants to see God, he wants to feel God and communicate with God, and to have some kind of acknowledgement that what he's doing makes sense, and that he's on the right path, and that God's taking care of him. And he gets hidden in this mountain crevice, and the presence of the Lord goes before him, and he's expecting some kind of display. And the text seems to indicate that he's expecting God to be give him some kind of specific message, some grand thing. And it talks about this tremendous wind blowing, this great fire coming, and it says God wasn't in those things. What does that mean? Well, I'm not quite sure. But apparently Elijah did. And then there was this sound of a small wind blowing, or a gentle sighing, and different versions render it different ways. Something very small, something insignificant, that probably under normal circumstances Elijah never would have paid attention to. But it appears from the context that this was God communicating. Maybe not a specific message. He gives him a specific message in a moment. But an acknowledgement, I am here with you. I'm aware of your situation. I am present. Sometimes we need that small, quiet moment to remind ourselves how great and how marvelous our God is. Closely related to that, find time to pray. I mentioned this this morning. One of the first things I thought of. And I'm not trying to suggest here that my prayer life is worthy of emulation here, because my prayer life leaves a lot to be desired. But I will say this at least. One of the very first things that I thought of when there's nothing going on and nobody to interrupt, I ought to pray about something. And so you find time. You make time. Evening, morning, and at noon. David says in Psalm 55, verse 17, I will pray. And he's talking there particularly about praying for help, praying for relief. But there are other things to pray for, and there's no reason why you can't look for multiple opportunities to pray to God for whatever it may be on your mind. A problem, a blessing, an opportunity, a friend, yourself, your future, your past, your mistakes, your successes, whatever it happens to be. God wants us to communicate with him. He wants us to find an opportunity to reach out to him. Every situation is going to provide some semblance of motivation, some opportunity, whether a good news, bad news, anything in between. Whatever opportunity we have, whatever time it may be. You know, Nehemiah is asked a question by the ruler of the world, and he prayed, and they answered the question. I've always wondered how long that prayer was. Yeah. How long could it possibly have been? How involved could it have been? But I'll tell you, there have been moments in my life, maybe in yours as well. You know, Lord, help me. Maybe close my eyes briefly, maybe not. Whatever. A second. Half a second. When that is our instinct to reach out to God. Maybe not with a whole big, long list of requests and complaints and such, but maybe just with an acknowledgement that he is God and that we need him right now, or that somebody else needs him. Now, the text doesn't say your prayer has to be 10 minutes long. It just says it has to come from the heart. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 17 and 18 talks about how we're supposed to pray without ceasing. I trust we understand what that means. In everything give thanks. It's not talking about a completely prayerful existence in which every moment of every day is spent literally in prayer. That's not what he's trying to say. But every opportunity that comes up, good, bad, and in between, is all opportunity for you to pray. Mr. Haley is quoted as saying back when he was still with us, every cause of worry is a cause for prayer. That's a pretty good way of looking at things. If you're worried about something, why aren't you praying about it? And if you're praying about it, why are you worrying about it? Find time to reflect. Think about important, you know, and it doesn't have to be necessarily, how am I going to change the world in the next 10 years? You know, what am I going to do to radically impact the Church of Jesus Christ? What am I going to do? It doesn't have to be huge. But think about important things. Allow your mind to go in important directions. And focus on what's actually going on in your life, in your friend's life, in your family's life. And try to put things into perspective. You know, that's, I say that, I really hate that phrase. We're competing for a basketball game, and then we find out that somebody's father died. Well, that really puts things in perspective. Really? You had to wait until somebody died to realize it's important that people die? And I think that we can probably do a little bit better than that. Anyway, any moment in your life, regardless of what's happening or what's not happening, you have the opportunity, and I would argue you have the obligation, to look at your life and determine what is worthwhile, what's not worthwhile, what are we doing, what are we not doing, what are we doing that isn't going quite as well as we might. Solomon, toward the end of his life, writes the Ecclesiastes, and at the end of that book, in chapter 12, and verse number 9 and following, in addition to being a wise man, the preacher also taught people knowledge, and he pondered, searched out, and arranged many proverbs. The preacher sought to find delightful words and to write words of truth correctly. He's valuing the work that he's doing. The words of wise men are like goads, and masters of those collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. But beyond this, my son, be warned, the writing of many books is endless, and endless devotion to books is wearying to the body. Every college student's favorite memory verse right there. Devotion to books is wearisome to the body. It can be. Realize, yes, you are engaged in profitable things, but try to keep things in perspective. The conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act of judgment, everything which is hidden, whether good it is good or evil. Remember who you are. Remember what the world is that you're living in. Think about circumstances of your life. And allow yourself opportunities to direct yourself. Don't wait until there is no more time to change courses. I bet you that every single person in this room at some point in their life has made a relatively important life decision in a moment like this. Maybe not in a deer blind, but Keith's probably fishing. Yeah, maybe you're reading a book or whatever it happens to be that you do. And you suddenly realize, you know what? I need to take that job. You know what? I need to change my major. I need to ask that girl to marry me. Whatever it happens to be. I need to serve Jesus Christ. That's what I need to do. I need to make a change. I need to redirect my path. It's not that necessarily I'm going in the wrong path, but I'm not totally in the right path. I can do better than this. I need to do better than this. There's going to come a time when you're not going to have that opportunity. Some of you are aware. Tracy and I have friends back in Texas who notified us last Monday that an elder in the Lord's church was killed in a car wreck by a drunk driver on the way home from an elder's meeting. Come out of nowhere. Now, you don't expect something like that. You don't expect to die immediately in your 50s. Or in your 70s. Certainly don't expect in your 20s, right? But it happens from time to time. Far better for us to take advantage of the moments that we have and consider, what am I doing with it? Is this time well spent? Am I pointed in the right direction? And after having done that, after having spent our time in reflection, and hopefully in prayer as well, then go out into our life and make a change if necessary. Be brave enough to make a change, to correct our course, so that we can be a little bit more like Jesus wants us to be, or a lot more like Jesus wants us to be, if that is the need that we happen to have. What a terrible thing it would be if we spent an entire life in reflection and spent years and years talking about how wonderful it would be if I would be more devoted toward Jesus Christ. Yeah, I would get baptized. I know that, and one of these days I'm going to be baptized. And I have every intention of being baptized. And I wait, and I wait, and I wait. And I wait, and I wait. Not for any particular reason, just because I'm not motivated to do it at this particular moment. I spend my entire life in reflection, never get around to doing what Jesus told me to do. What a tragedy that would be. So yes, reflect on your life. Yes, pray about your life. Give God the praise for what you're doing. But realize that at the end of the day, you need to act. Do something in accordance with the principles that you have been reflecting upon, the principles that Jesus has given you in his word. Which brings us to the invitation. If you are ready to give your life to Jesus Christ, if you have not yet put him on in baptism, you know, it's necessary. Jesus said so. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. You want to be saved? We all want to be saved, right? Some of us knew that, and that's why we put Jesus on in baptism. Some of us know that and haven't done that. Maybe today's the day for you to do that. Put your faith to work. Allow Jesus to be your Lord and Savior. Be washed in his blood. Rise up to walk in newness of life. Go to heaven when you die. If this is your need, or if in anything else we can help you walk with Christ more perfectly, please allow us to encourage you while we stand and sing at this time.